Are you tired of spending your time and money chasing strategy after strategy, only to discover what worked 10, 5, or even 2 years ago is not working now? Things shift fast in the online space, and if you're not keeping up, you're getting left behind. It's time for something different. Welcome to the Marketing, Media, and Money Podcast, where every single episode will be jam-packed with proven, profitable strategies, behind-the-scenes secrets, and what's working now resources from industry experts and global influencers to help you scale your business, shorten your learning curve, and stand out in a crowded, noisy marketplace. And now, your host, award-winning marketing and media strategist and international speaker, Patty Farmer.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to today's episode of the Marketing, Media, and Money Podcast. My name is Patty Farmer, and I'm your host, and I am looking forward to sharing another amazing industry expert with you today. And let me tell you a little bit about her. So Dr. Manette Riordan is a risk taker and curiosity seeker who loves jumping feet first into business building and art making. Her mantra is, how hard can it be? A modern-day Renaissance woman, Manette is an artist, writer, award-winning entrepreneur, and advocate for creativity as essential to the well-being of all people and our planet. She has built several successful businesses and published 3 books, including her bestseller, The Artful Marketer, and helps leaders and their teams reconnect to their innate creativity. She believes that we are all creative, and when we become disconnected from our inner creative fire, we lose sight of our passion and purpose, but when we are all working in our highest and best creative genius, we can solve all the world's problems. I love that, and I just love thinking that it's that easy. So, Manette, thank you so much for being here with me today.
Yeah, thanks for having me. I'm so excited to be connecting with you.
I'm so excited, too, because a lot of what people don't know is how long we have actually known each other. I think you were one of the very first people I met when I moved to Dallas like 13 years ago. Yeah. And we networked back then when you had that networking group and I had my networking group. And I think that was one of the very first things that I learned about you was how collaborative you were, right? Mm-hmm. Because a lot of people, when they have a thing and you have a thing, they see that as a threat. And for us, we were like, oh, how can we support each other? Yeah. And right away, I knew that you were a soul to soul for me, that you were that person that thought like me and kind of came from service, which is what I'm all about. And I know you are too. So let's kind of talk about really the jump, right? Because I remember when you moved away from Dallas, and I have to tell you, whether I ever said it to you or not, you were such an inspiration to me. Not because you moved from Dallas to Santa Barbara, which is one of my most favorite places, right? But it was how you made that decision. And I remember when I asked you, you shared with me that you didn't know how you were going to make it work. You just decided you were going to work. And then you just decided that's what you were going to do. And you just made it happen. And how it all worked together was like amazing for me to really know. And so that was really manifestation at its absolute best for me. So kind of tell us a little bit about that, because we didn't just wake up and decide what we were going to do one day. Right? There's those aha moments, sometimes a big one, sometimes little ones, but it does happen. So tell us a little bit about that journey.
Yeah, thank you. It's sometimes it's hard to remember back. It's been a while. So this June is going to be 8 years since we moved to Santa Barbara from Plano, Texas. And it's so funny because I can see in my mind's eye us sitting having coffee at La Madeleine in Plano so clearly and having these conversations. And what happened for us was we realized that we were living life from a place of complacency and not really creating the life that we wanted. And we knew also that our kids were getting older, and if we were really committed to moving, we had to make some decisions fast or we would be stuck in Plano, nothing bad about Plano at all, but we would be stuck there until they graduated from high school, which at the time was 7 or 8 years in the future. And we thought, we don't want to be here this much longer, but getting out of that complacency and taking action was really, really challenging. And so the kids and their age helped create some urgency but also this recognition that it was really on us to be creating the life that we wanted. And so we made the decision. It took us a year and a half to 2 years to get, you know, money in order, business in order, jobs in order, house ready to go on the market. And we just started taking the right steps in the right direction. And the more that we moved in the right direction, you know, in the direction of what we wanted most, the more everything fell into place so that by the time our house went on the market, it sold in a couple of weeks. We had an amazing realtor. I flew to Santa Barbara. I bought a house in less than 24 hours, a beautiful house that we still live in today, about less than 2 miles from the beach, which is amazing in Santa Barbara. We came at the perfect time. We bought at the bottom of the housing market, so we got a great deal on the house. We had family support us in our move. Like, everything worked out perfectly. And my husband didn't know what he was going to do when we got here. And for the first time ever, his company said, well, yeah, of course you can telecommute. So he kept his awesome job in Texas and was able to work from home, which had been a dream of ours. And I was freed up to decide what I wanted to do next with my life. And we were so ready, Patty, to, you know, live in a tiny apartment. It didn't matter. We were committed to being in Santa Barbara, no matter what it looked like. And so what it ended up looking like was perfect. We got a house about the same size as our house in Texas, not with a pool, sadly, but, you know, it's not as warm here as it was in Texas. We haven't missed having a pool to take care of. But we got exactly what we wanted because we were so clear we were coming to Santa Barbara no matter what.
And you're 2 miles from the beach, and that makes up for a lot, right?
It does.
And I have to tell you what's super interesting to me is that inspiration. You know, sometimes people will inspire you. They'll say something to you, and you'll just kind of put it away, and it doesn't come to play for a while. So here's what that actually did for me. So when my husband and I decided to move, and, you know, we moved because of his job, right? You know, that's the great thing about being an entrepreneur, and you can do your business anywhere, right? But one of the things was we were really not clear with what we wanted. Once we moved, though, we realized what we wanted. Like, we talked about it all the time. But I have to tell you, since he doesn't listen to my podcast, he was kind of wishy-washy.
Yeah.
Right? You know, he wanted it, but he just wasn't all in. Right?
Yeah.
And so that the thing, it didn't happen. Like, it just didn't happen for like 18 months. And one time we had this conversation and I told him, I said, listen, Manette told me, and I told him the story. And yeah. I said, listen, until you make the decision that we're all in, then it will happen. But as long as we're still wishy-washy about it, it's not going to happen. And so we got on the same page, and like within 2 months, we had a plan, right?
And it's amazing that the universe just shows up for you. And it's the same in business, right? It's like I can see places in my business when I got here where I was wishy-washy and it was slow to get started. And then, you know, I got going. And then over the last couple of years, I got wishy-washy again. And it's like you have to be all in. And I wonder sometimes, like, I've been so good at doing that in different moments of my life, and in others I've really struggled with being all in. And I think it's a rich conversation to have with people, especially around your topic of marketing, media, and money, right? And because it's like, if you're not all in, you're not going to get the support that you need. And I don't know about you, the thing that I think has kept us connected for the last 13, 15 years is that sense of collaboration and connection that we felt. And we've stayed connected. Thank goodness for Facebook. It's made it so easy to follow each other's journeys. But, you know, it's like we always know the other person is there for those opportunities when they arise. And learning to reach out and get on the same page, like with yourself, with your spouse, with your clients, like where else can you look at your life and have that energy of being all in? And I'm asking myself this question right now because I have some areas in my business where I'm not all in yet and it's going slowly. And so I'm so appreciative of you reminding me of the power that I have when I am all in.
You know, I think it's kind of interesting too. And thank you for that. I think it's kind of interesting because you're right. In businesses, that is so true. And here's what I find, which kind of leads into your area of expertise in this whole creativity, is that I realized a few years ago, like I think I've always known, but I got really clear that I am very, very creative.
Yeah.
But in business, there are tasks and things you have to do that are not.
Yeah.
That are not creative. And so for the most part, I outsource those. You know, I like to work in my brilliance and hire people to work in theirs. I really believed in that. It served me well. However, there have also been times that it has held me hostage too, right? You know, so while I do believe you should outsource, you should still know how to do it. So when you have to do it, you can. But yeah. What I realized for me is I've scheduled my whole day now in that way. So I know when I get up in the morning, I am the most creative. So I do all my creative tasks at that point, and I do all my admin tasks at the end of the day. And so now that I have shifted that and recognized that, it has really, really served me well, because what I realized is when I am in, all my creative juices are flowing and everything's going good. As soon as I step over and have to do an admin task, it's very, very hard for me to go back and forth into creativity. So I find that I need to stay in creativity for as long as I can. And I like being in creativity when I'm also in revenue generating things too.
Yes, absolutely.
And then I can do admin tasks to the things that I have to do that I can't outsource. But I 100% give myself grace and have just accepted that I can't do them both at the same time. Maybe you can, and you could give us some tips on how you can. I cannot.
No, I'm a huge fan. So it's funny you said that, because I've been thinking a lot about, so one of the principles that I teach around creativity comes actually from the design industry, and it's about creative constraints and how having constraints in place actually make us more creative. And a great example of a constraint is, one, knowing when your most creative time is. So for me, it's in the morning also, and blocking that time and treating it as sacred, so that you know that when you show up at that block of time, and it doesn't matter what time of day that block is, but when you show up at that block, ready to be creative, your mind is already generating the thoughts and ideas that you need to enter into that creative space. So people tend to think that they need hours and hours and hours and days and days and days, and they have to be in flow all of the time. I just want to bust that myth right here. And actually, you can teach yourself to drop into flow at the drop of a hat by putting clear constraints in place. And if I know every morning is my creative time and I show up to the page or the canvas or whatever the course creation, whatever it is that needs to happen in the moment, then I'm ready to go. And in fact, my subconscious has been working on the ideas and the dreams and the words and the colors before I show up at this space. And creatives in particular, but a lot of entrepreneurs, you know, they quit their jobs and started their businesses to have all this freedom and flexibility. Well, you can have freedom and flexibility within constraints. And so putting constraints in place will actually improve your efforts and your creative flow, your ideation, your inspiration. And you'll get so much tons of, can we curse on your show?
Go for it.
Tons of shit done, right? Because what happens for all of us is that we get into that creative flow. We don't want to stop, and we never get to the admin. We never get to the marketing activities on our list. We keep pushing them off and off, trying to extend flow. And it's actually been proven that, you know, your flow lasts about 90 minutes and then you need a break anyway. And then you can come back to flow at a later time, but you need a break. And what happens is that then we become less creative. We become frustrated. We actually get really critical and judgmental of ourselves because we're not getting these important tasks done. So creating constraints around our time is the number one thing I think that moves us towards success in our business and in our creativity.
I love that. One of the things that I have found for myself is I like to say I can do anything for 30 minutes, right? You know, it doesn't matter what it is, even something I absolutely don't love to do. But if I know I only have to do it for 30 minutes and I block that time and say, it's easier for me to focus and say, I only have to do it for 30 minutes.
Yeah.
Right? And then I can get a lot done. And it's like, how much can I get done? It's like you play a game with yourself, right? How much can you get done in 30 minutes, right? And I only have to do that. And that works really well for me. And I find that when you take that break, it is important, because I have really noticed that when I'm taking that break, if I take that break and I have my puppies in my lap and spend some time with my puppies, like all of a sudden I get like an extra little spark before I go into admin, because that was just so enjoyable for me. Yes. And then I can just do what I have to do. And I'm like, you know, and I reward myself too. Like, I'm on a reward system. Like, I'll just admit it. Like, I watch The Bachelor, but I record it and I tell myself, I got to get these tasks done. And once I get this done, then I can go watch it. So whatever it takes for everybody to be able to do it. But also on the creative side, one of the things that I also found is that color really matters to me. Mm-hmm. And so I found that when I do things in color, like my calendar is in color and stuff like that. And so when I see color, I used to look at my calendar and it was just black and white. But when I started putting things in there that were really important to me in this color, my work things are in my branded colors, that is really helped me be creative too. So there's some different things that we can do. But I hear people say a lot, you know, people say, oh, I'm really not all that creative. I wish I had a dollar for every time I've heard that. My clients have said it when they first come on and be my clients. Why do you think people feel like they're not creative?
Because we all have creativity scars, as Brené Brown calls them. We all have those wounds from childhood when somebody said to us, oh, you can't draw, you can't paint, you can't sing, you're too big to be a ballerina. That was mine, right? You know, there's all these things that we get told that shut us down creatively. And it could come from a parent, it could come from a teacher. Oftentimes it comes from peers. You know, you show your friend your precious drawing and say, oh, look at my awesome horse. And they're like, that's not a horse. And we instantly get this story of I can't draw. I heard a crazy story about a young man who was really good at sports and really good at art. And at least he thought he was really good at art and he loved art. And he overheard his art teacher say to his mom, make sure that he sticks it out with sports because he's really not that good at art, right? And so he stopped doing what he loved for a really long time. Now that man went on to become Chase Jarvis, who's the founder of Creative Live, who has a huge following, has like, I can't remember, 1.6 million, you know, students in his platform. And he just wrote an awesome new book called Creative Calling. And he's brilliant. And I loved his book because I'm like, yes, this is everything I know and everything that I believe. But the thing is that we oftentimes, so there's two things. There's what we were told as children about what we weren't good at, and nobody likes to not be good at things. And then the other part of that is that I would say, especially in the United States, there's this sort of bizarre conflation between art and creativity, and they're not the same thing at all. Art making is an aspect of creativity, but as human beings, we're all innately creative. It's the thing that sets us apart as a species on the planet. Is our ability to solve problems, to look for new solutions, to combine things in novel and innovative ways that no one's ever looked at before. And art, dance, software development, business building, those are all expressions of creativity. Some of us were closet Martha Stewarts. It's entertainment or movement. For scientists, it's their ability to pose a hypothesis. Right? That creative act of proposing a hypothesis, like having that curious question. Curiosity is one of my favorite aspects of the creative process. Getting curious and just asking questions all the time, instead of going into judgment or I don't know, just getting curious and saying, well, what if it did all work out? What if I could find the answer? What if I already knew the next step to take? So curiosity is an aspect of creativity that I think is, under talked about, and I'm seeing it talked about a lot more in the marketplace. But we have these core wounds that tell us I'm not an artist, therefore I'm not creative. And I want to uncouple those two things. And the definition of artistry is simply skill or ability. It actually has nothing to do with art. Art is an aspect of artistry. But you and I both love to speak. Speaking is an artistry of ours. Right? It's something that we're both super passionate about. Connecting with people and collaboration is an artistry. Like anybody can develop skill and talent in a particular area, especially if they're super passionate about it.
I love that. So if that is the definition of artistry, how would you, in your words, actually define creativity?
Yeah. So for me, creativity is a mindset as well as a skill set. And it's the way that we approach a particular problem or scenario or even a worldview. It's how we look at things from a place of childlike awe and wonder and say, I wonder if, when I think about, you know, the most amazing artist in the world, Like they came always from the space of curiosity. What if we combine these things, right? Or the most creative and innovative thinkers of our time, like Seth Godin to me is one of the most creative human beings on the planet in his ability to see the connections between ideas and solutions in the marketplace and put them into a format that the rest of us go, oh, right? So he's one of my personal marketing heroes. And having watched his evolution over time, I remember in Plano reading his first book, All Marketers Are Liars. And it's because marketers are innately creative. That's our job as marketers, is to come up with the right language, the right message. And it all starts from this place of having a creative mindset as opposed to a fixed mindset of, I don't know the solution to that, but being able to see solutions, being able to see opportunities and possibilities.
I love that. Now, I always like to talk to people, and we're always talking about their zone of genius. Like, I love that expression, right?
Yeah.
What your zone of genius is. And one of the things that I used to laugh, because I didn't really understand that it was my zone of genius until somebody that we both know, Jane Duber, who was my coach for a while, and now is a very, very dear friend, said something to me once, and it was like, oh, she said, Patty, here is what your zone of genius is. For me, I didn't realize that. For me, it's just something I love. But it's like, I used to laugh as a joke and say, I could talk to anybody for 5 minutes, and if they tell me about their business, I can be like, you can stop talking now. I've already made you $1 million. It was like a joke. But the bottom line is I love looking at everything everybody has. And they're like, Patty, I just haven't been able to monetize my business. And I look at all that and I'm thinking, really? Because I see like all kinds of possibilities of what they have. Like, you know, so sometimes people come to the table and they have all these things they've done and tools and stuff, right? And then sometimes they don't. But it doesn't matter which one it is. For me, I love like putting those pieces together. Mm-hmm. And that's one of my absolute favorite, most creative thing to do when I'm working with people, is to really be able to do something like, oh, I didn't realize that. And I have like a whole little thing I do with colors and stuff to make it happen. But I didn't really consider that a creative process. I just thought it was like, that's just how I thought. And I think a lot of times people don't realize that something that is so simple to them and how they think, they are being creative. They just don't even realize it.
Right. Because they think creativity equals art. And because it's so easy and effortless and not hard, they also don't see it as genius, right? You know, we think that we have to work hard for genius, and the opposite is true. So the big leap by Gay Hendricks, who coined zone of genius, you know, is one of the people that talks about that aspect of genius. And to me, it's just brilliant, and yet it's so complicated. So one of my areas of brilliance is helping people find their zone of genius. And it's usually about fully integrating all of their creative gifts and abilities into whatever their business model is. Because oftentimes they will go down a path of business, and they will think all these things that they've done before, been before, learned before, aren't important anymore, right? Or they don't have value in the business that they're creating. And the truth is, it's all of the things that we've done before make us exactly the perfect person to go ahead with whatever it is that we're building now. But we forget, and we forget that we're creative, right? We forget that we have these innate gifts and talents since childhood that merit a place in our lives now. And a lot of times I think what also gets people stuck, Patty, and if I had a dime for every time somebody said this, I'd be, you know, a bazillionaire at this point. So I have people say two things to me. They either say I'm not creative, and I say, yes, you are. Or when I say that I work with creatives and I help them build profitable businesses, they say, oh, thank God, they need that. So the deep-seated myth of the starving artist is so rooted in our culture, and it pisses me off. Like, I could get on my soapbox all day about that. There's never been a better time to make a living as a creative. And all entrepreneurs are creative. We're building something out of nothing. That's creativity. There's another definition, making something out of nothing, or combining two unusual things into something new that no one ever saw before. Like the paperclip, the most creative, tiny little thing that was a game changer, right? The paperclip, sticky notes, other great examples of creativity in process that completely revolutionized how so many of us work in our offices on a daily basis. So to me, this deep-seated myth of the starving artist really upsets me. I hear parents say it. I actually heard my husband say it about my son, who's in art school to be a jewelry maker, right? It's like the common thread is, how are you going to make a living doing that? And I've had people say to me, my parents wouldn't pay for me to go to art school because they were worried that kids wouldn't be able to make a living as artists. But in art school, they don't teach you business. They don't teach you marketing. They teach you how to be artists. That's their job, is to teach you how to be artists. But it's the artist's responsibility to understand how to build a business around their art.
I love that. You know, jewelry making is my passion, right? So I do it and I love it. And again, it's kind of funny what we're saying here, because when I would make jewelry, right? So you design it and then you put it together and make it. Yeah. And I found that once I would put it together, like I didn't want to make another thing. So again, going back to that same thing that I said in the beginning about doing two things, when I go in and design jewelry, I design like 10 things and then I let it sit. And like, until I stop going in and go, oh, well, I could do this. Or now I used to have to break them all up and take them apart because I come up with another idea. So now I don't put them together till literally I can go a whole week without wanting to change something. And then I do it. And people have said to me, Patty, how come you don't sell your jewelry? And my answer to that is because I never want to do the same thing twice. Like, I like to just create and just be able to do it. And I love the idea of color and depth and texture and all that kind of stuff. Back in the day, I used to paint t-shirts when that was in, you know, and do all that kind of stuff. And so I really love it. It's kind of really the thing I like to do on break when I need to get away from my business.
And I am such a fan of hobbies. I think we need to make a case for bringing creative hobbies back. And I think we do a disservice to people, me included, when people say you should sell your art, right? And it's been a whole roller coaster ride for me. So the art making is the thing that I do for me. And when it sells and I'm happy. You know, and no two things will ever look alike. This painting has like 5 or 7 paintings underneath it. I tend to just paint over and over and over things till it tells me that like this is the final painting on the canvas and it won't change. And people are like, oh my God, how can you? And I'm like, I'm painting because I love to paint. I'm not painting to make something for someone else to love or to buy. And I think that's an aspect of cultivating creativity that's essential to our well-being. And it doesn't have to be about making a career out of it or, you know, going and setting up a shop on Redbubble and selling your stuff. It's about nourishing your soul so that you have the fuel and the inspiration to grow your business.
I really love that, because one of the things that's funny is you were talking about, you know, your parents or your peers. So when I was growing up, my parents really, really were really big on painting and art and stuff. And I just didn't like to paint. And it just really wasn't my thing. Like I just... Really?
My son either. He's like, it's too messy and too fussy.
It just really wasn't my thing. But what is my thing, and I didn't realize it till I was older, is I love photography. Mm-hmm. And in actuality, in my home, my whole house is decorated with photography. Oh, like, wow. I love the way that you can add filters and you can do all these different things to make art. And people, you know, there's always this case for, oh, is that really natural? No. If somebody stands there for 7 hours in the same spot just waiting for this to happen, that is art, right? You know, and so I love that. And so I finally just told myself, you know, it's just different for different people. But to get back to you and I in the beginning, one of the things that I realized is an art that most people don't realize is the art of collaboration. Yeah. Because one of the things that I noticed early on is, for me, it was always about, you know, who can I connect? And the introductions that I could do. And I got pretty known for that. You actually were too. But one of the things that I didn't even realize was an art was that people sometimes would introduce you and they'd say, oh, Patty, you need to know such and such. And then that's all they'd say, right? You know, and you're like, okay, that's good. Now I'm pretty good at being able to ask the right questions to get there. But people would always say to me, oh my gosh, Patty, when you do introductions, like your introductions are like, you know, whatever, because it's always like, well, what was the spark that you saw that made you decide that you wanted to do it? Pass it on, right? Mm-hmm. Let them know what's the reason why you wanted to introduce them to each other. What's the spark you saw? Make the conversation easier for them, right? You know, not to say, like, I've had people introduce me. One of the best introductions I ever got is to somebody who was in the makeup industry, of which we probably know 20 million people, right, that do that. But she has probably referred me more business that resulted in clients than anybody. So it's all about who we know, not just about what we do, yeah. Right? But with that said, I realize that we should always tell people that. And a lot of times, even like with my clients, with my other clients or different people, when you say, and you and I have had conversations about this. Oh, you know what would be really great is if you did this and you wrote the copy and you did this and you did that. And they're like, oh, wow, I never thought of that. And I'm just thinking, that was like not rocket science or brain surgery or whatever. It makes so much sense. And I realize not everybody sees it.
Right.
Being able to be creative and see how each person brings something to the table differently, has different skills, but not just different skills, different passions too. Because you could be good at something. It may not be something you're passionate about, right? Just because you have a skill set.
Yeah, that's what Dave Hendrix would call your zone of competence, right? Or your zone of excellence. It's the thing that you're good at and you may even be known for, but it's not the thing that you're really called to do.
Right. So I think that's really important. And so for me, I used to say all the time that relationships are the currency in today's business environment. But I'm finding that while that is true, I think creativity is really becoming currency too. And I know you talk about that. So what's your take on it?
Yeah. So the reason why I think and I speak about why I think creativity is the new currency in corporate American and transformational leadership is, so for a couple of reasons. So to just back up, first of all, IBM did a study in 2010, so it's been 10 years, 1,500 CEOs globally, all different kinds and sizes of companies. They cited creativity as the number one skill for leaders today. 10 years ago, for the last 2 years, so 2019 and 2020, LinkedIn cited creativity as the number one soft skill people need to develop in the job market today. Right. So in LinkedIn, we know has access to gobs and gobs of data. Who wouldn't love to, you know, have access to some of that data? And so the reason that creativity is the new currency is because this is what companies are looking for. And on the consumer side, it's also what consumers are looking for. There's this fascinating sort of rising consciousness of our need to be more creative. And it's witnessed on the corporate side by these conversations around design thinking, especially innovation, brainstorming. We hear all kinds of conversation on the corporate side. On the personal side, did you know that coloring books have been in the top 10 bestseller list in Amazon for a decade? Adult coloring books.
I know, I love it.
And it's because people are seeing this need to calm ourselves down, to relieve stress, to relax, but also to access that creative part of ourselves that we have set aside. And oftentimes people say, oh, I'll do that when I retire, or I don't have time for that. I don't have space in my house. And the truth is, the more you make time for creative play in your personal life, the more innovative and creative you'll be at work, whether it's in your own business or in a career. And so to me, creativity is the currency of both of these things. And we're seeing this beautiful cycle of reciprocity between people wanting more creativity, companies wanting more creativity, but no one's really coming in and saying, well, how do we access creativity, right? There's a couple of models out there, but really, how do we on a daily basis access creativity and commit to making time for play? And I think the answer is really simple. It's start with play. It has to be playful and fun. We can't see it as another chore. And we know that in the corporate marketplace and big companies, there's not a lot of play happening. So people are burnt out. And creativity has become a conversation that's happening interdepartmentally. It's not just in marketing and design or product development. Like, creativity is like becoming this beautiful conversation across every level of a company. And yet only one in four people believe they're creative. So companies say we want more creativity. Individuals are saying we want more creativity. And the only thing in the middle right now is coloring books. There's a problem here. So there needs to be some new methodology to help people activate their creativity. And I've created a simple five-step formula for making that happen. And it starts with curiosity and making time to play and returning to that childlike sense of wonder and awe and thinking about, what did I love to do as a kid that I don't do anymore? Like, for me, I don't know about you, but me and my cousins and my brother, making forts was like a favorite thing to do on a rainy day in the living room with every blanket and chair in the house. Or we lived outside of San Antonio, Texas, and we had woods, you know, making a fort in the woods with anything that we could find. And then we would have a storytelling time. And there was all this creative innovation and imagination that happened in the context of making these forts. So where could you bring some of that playfulness back into your life so that it would actually spark that creative thinking? Because what happens is we're in this place of just rote repetition the industrial age got us all in the machine age of just doing the same thing over and over again. We've lost our ability to think creatively and to play.
What are the other four keys?
Thank you for asking. So constraints, one we already talked about. So after curiosity, we have to talk about what are the creative constraints. And I love to share the example of a creative constraint. If I asked you to draw a three-dimensional lifelike representation of a human body, you might freak out because, you know, most of us didn't go to art school and learn how to draw like an artist. But if I said to you, using nothing but a triangle, a circle, and a square, draw a representation of the human body, not only would you go, okay, I can totally do this, but in a room of 1, 10, 100, or 2,000, you'd get 2,000 different representations of the human figure. So think about it. You could have a circle for a head, a triangle for a body, and a couple of little rectangles for arms and legs, right? That would be one version. Maybe you have a triangle head and a big round belly. So, but you can take these three shapes and they have infinite possibility to create a representation of the human figures, an example of the principle of constraints. So the third one that I love to talk about is compassion. We have to get out of the voice of the inner critic, stop judging ourselves or thinking, I can't do this, I don't have enough skill. Drawing is a skill. It is not a talent. Some people are better at it than others, but anyone can learn to draw. So having compassion for ourselves when it comes to creative expression, so that we're in the place of lack of judgment. This is true in any kind of meeting where people are presenting ideas. There has to be compassion for all the ideas presented. Otherwise, it completely shuts down the creativity when you're constantly being told, no, that's not right. That's a stupid idea. And it happens from the time kids are in kindergarten all the way up into corporate boardrooms, right? That people are being shamed and shut down for their ideas. So we have to have compassionate space for ideas. The next one is congruence. And what I mean by congruence is we have to have alignment between what it is that we want and what we're creating in the world. And how that impacts creativity is getting out of our heads, connecting to our heart and to our gut to be able to see differently than we've been looking at the world in the past. Because we're constantly so focused on what's in our head that we forget to access the other aspects of ourselves that actually fuel creativity. And then finally, the fifth one is probably the hardest one, and it's courage. It's courage to look stupid. It's courage to fail. It's courage to try something new. It's courage to be in beginner's mind. It's courage to take that first step towards expressing our ideas, gifts, talents, and creative abilities.
I love that. I always like to say that failure is just a bruise. It's not a tattoo.
That's right. I love that. That's a great one.
So now let's take all this around what we've been talking about, and let's apply it to speaking. How do you feel about how they can easily access that? Because I have to tell you, when I became a speaker, I have this tendency that I'm all in, right? So when I have my business hat on, right, I am all in for business. And so one of the things that I struggled with, and still do actually, is I can write my whole speech. I can know what my whole thing is going to be. And when I go to bed at night, I have to tell myself, okay, now I need to get creative and what's the stories I'm going to interweave and all that kind of stuff. And it's amazing how I'll wake up in the morning and I'll just have all these ideas. And then I can go and put them in there. But I know some people start their whole thing with what is their story going to be. That is not the easiest part for me. It's how I'm going to connect everybody is the easiest part for me. And what is it that how I want to help them, what I want them to take away. So I always start with that, but story is really what's really important, but that's a very creative part. And somebody we know, Katarina Rando, I was at an event once, and I believe you were there too, when she told that story about her mother wanting to marry her off with the nuns. Do you remember that story?
I don't.
So she had told this story, basically it was that her mom wanted her to get married. She hadn't got married yet. So her mom went and hired these nuns to pray for her. But the thing that was so funny about it, though, is interweaved in this story, she used all these business terms. Like one of the things that she said was when the year was up and she still wasn't married, that her mom renewed her subscription, right? You know, so it was funny how she could tell this life story and added all these things. And I was mesmerized by that. And afterwards, I'm like, which did you start with? Did you start with the story and then added the business terms? Did you decide this and then you found a story that fitted? I was fascinated by how great she was able to put both those things together. Mm-hmm. Right. And I thought, man, that was really creative. Right. And it wasn't that, it's not that easy for me. That part is something that I really have to work on. So from a speaking point of view, like, what are some examples you could give on creativity for that, for speaking?
The five steps work perfect for creating a presentation. In fact, I just gave this same talk to a group of leaders where I told them what the five keys were. I did an exercise with them and then showed them why we were activating the five keys. But if you think about, the first key is curiosity. So from my perspective, when you're invited to give a speech or you're trying to create your TED talk or your, you know, signature talk, you want to think about first, who is the story for? Who is the presentation for? So get really curious about the other person first, right? So for me, you know, and I know you do this, like if you're going to go speak someplace, you ask about the audience, absolutely, right? And so even though you come from the business versus the story, and actually I do it the same way you do. I create my teaching points first and then I go back and add in story.
But it's all about them.
It is all about them. Right. It is all about them. So, but I get really curious about the audience first. And then I think about the constraints. So when you're creating a speech, there's a couple of different constraints. The first constraint always is time. You almost always have a limited amount of time that you get to speak. So you got to think about, okay, I only have 20 minutes to talk about these five keys. What's most important to share with people? So it helps us like let go of our babies, right? In writing, they call it kill your babies, right? It helps us let go of all the fluff and get to the meat. So that would be the constraint, would be time. And then the next piece is compassion. And I would again turn that outward as a speaker and have compassion for your audience. Really see where it is that they most need your support. And then ask yourself, what stories have I personally experienced and lived, or have I seen in my clients that will best illustrate a compassionate result in this particular teaching point? Like if you're always coming from a place of compassion and service and love, it's easy to tell the story because we want what's best for our audience. And then the fourth one was congruence, making sure that you're always giving a talk that you feel 100% in alignment, that the talk is always aligned with your vision and your values and your mission, if you talk about mission or your purpose, like that, having a talk that's aligned, giving the talk that matters to you, and that talk is also aligned with the audience. There has to be a mirror match. And then finally, have the courage to just go lay it all out, right? Like, I mean, I think for speakers, we can spend so much time over preparing, we do ourselves a disservice, or we spend too much time focusing on a perfect slide deck instead of perfecting our delivery. And so for me, courage, it's really about the courage to connect with the audience, to let go of the slides, to let go of all the anything else happening, and to just stand you on that stage and 100% be connected to the audience and really let the audience see you. So for me, courage is that really final important piece of the process.
I have to tell you, that was probably the best representation I have ever heard of creativity and putting it on speaking. The best I've ever heard, hands down, Manette.
Thank you. And I just like came up with that like that.
How creative of you. How creative of you. Now, I have to tell you, from the courageous, I really love that one. And you are absolutely right there. One of the things that I do that people have said to me, ooh, that's brave, right? Is that, say I'm giving a talk and it's 45 minutes. Like, that's how much time I have. I prepare a 30-minute talk.
Yeah.
I never prepare a talk for the time. I always cut at least 15 or 20 minutes because I know it to be true that I will get there and I will connect with somebody and I will know that I need to, that maybe this wasn't where I was going to go, but in keeping with the congruency of the speech, they need a little bit more here. I need to say another story that I think is going to matter, and I can just tell it. It's happened to me every single time I've gone on a stage or virtual or a podcast, whatever the case may be, I just know, oh, this is what I need to say. So I always tell myself, okay, I'm going to be brave enough to leave myself that time and just know that I will know how to fill it.
Yeah. And you always do. And I think that, you know, this is the part that new speakers forget about, is you got to know your stuff.
Right.
And you got to come up with this is like, as a creative, this was so hard for me, Patty, so hard. When I was new to speaking, I was creating different talks all over the place. And then, you know, you'd find one or two that would land and you'd give that one a whole bunch of times. And then I'd get bored and I'm like, okay, I need to go talk about something else. And I was in creative mode too much of the time and not on the path to mastery. So I think after this activating creativity, we have to be willing to have the courage to practice and keep getting better at the same content. You and I have been doing this a long time. I realize, like, I've been speaking, I mean, since I knew you, right? At least 15 years, probably longer. If you count grad school, whereas a lot of years ago when I was doing university level presentations, right, at different conferences around the country. And I was so nervous and so new. And I would just like sit there shaking and be so sick to my stomach. I still get sick to my stomach after all these years before I go right on stage. Once I'm on stage, I'm fine. But that moment right before stage is so tender. Oh, man, I still get really nervous.
Me too. And I always like to tell people all the time, they may not believe it because I know I'm a talker. Yeah. I never fight to keep the microphone. They can always take it back. I never have a problem. As much as I like to talk, as much as that is who I am,
yeah,
right, I still have that moment before I go on stage that I have to still myself and say, it's not about you. Just let me connect to the person who needs to hear what I'm saying. And I think that that is really, really important. But when it's time, I can't wait to get off the stage and get out there with them because that's pretty much really who I am. But I think it is really, really important. I love that you really put these things in perspective. And I have to tell you, like, I'm going to listen to this thing a few times. It's really opened my eyes to really to seeing things a little bit differently. But I think that as a speaker, it doesn't matter whether it's you writing a book, whether you're speaking, whatever the case may be. And my guess is that it's going to be the same for you as it is for me. Is, you know how a lot of times people will ask you, people just say to be on their podcast, right? And they'll say, oh, they want to interview you. And this is what they want you to talk about, right? I have to tell you, I can talk about the same topic on 15 different podcasts. And then I've listened back and it's not even the same. The topic may be about leveraging the media. I get asked to speak a lot about that, leveraging the media. But how the conversation goes is not the same because you don't memorize what you're going to say, right? Yeah. And because you have all this stuff in your head, we've been doing what we do for a long time, right? People ask the question in a different way and that just makes you answer it in a different way, right?
Yeah.
So I think that is amazing. So, oh, it has been such a blessing actually to have you here. So I know they're going to want to. So how can everybody connect with you?
The easiest way to connect with me is just at my website, www.minettereyerden.com. I'm like so easy to find. I had my aunt look for my phone number one time online and she's like, oh my gosh, you're so easy to find. I'm like, yeah, there's not a lot of Minette Reyerdens out there. So I'm on
Facebook.
Isn't
it nice to hear that? You're so easy to find. Right? I love that. Right? You know, I think that's great. And as a great guest, you even came bearing gifts, right? It's like bringing a good bottle of wine to dinner, right? So you came bearing gifts. So tell us a little bit about the gift you have for the audience, as if just what you've said so far hasn't been enough, because it's been amazing.
Thank you. I appreciate that. So if you go to MinetteReyerden.com/gift, I have a 5-video series called Ignite Your Creative Fire. And each of the videos is just about getting in touch with creative play. So I look at collage, I look at a lot of different things, but it's just getting you into the heart space of I'm a creative human being. So if you've been longing for more play, you've been longing to reconnect to your own innate creativity, you can go check it out, watch the videos. Each one is really short, really simple. You don't need these special art supplies at home to do it. But it's about getting you to connect with your creativity. And when that fire is ignited, it will overflow into every other area of your life. I guarantee it.
I love that. I love that so much. So now we're at the portion of the show that I like to call open mic. It's my version of hashtag social karaoke. And this is where I pass the mic over to you. And the show is Marketing, Media, and Money. So I'd love for you to share with the audience, if you haven't already shared so much, what's your number one marketing, media, or money strategy for the audience?
Yeah, so I've been in business. I realize this year's my 19th year in business, and there's been multiple businesses in that 19 years, two main businesses. And hands down, the number one strategy that I go back to time after time after time is speaking. And that could be speaking on my own stage, that could be speaking on other people's stages, showing up on amazing, brilliant podcasts with beautiful people like Patty Farmer. It is being able to have the opportunity to connect live with an audience. It can never be under or overvalued enough, can never be like, we can't put enough value on getting out of our house and going and connecting with people. I would even include networking under the umbrella of speaking, because the more that we connect face-to-face with people and practice saying what it is that we do and see how it lands with the other person or with the audience, the better we get, the more we can tweak it, the more we can go. But I have literally, to date, if I added it all up over the years, millions of dollars in sales from speaking.
Oh, I absolutely love that. And I 100% agree. I hear people all the time say, oh, I'm always looking for opportunities. I'm looking for this opportunity or that opportunity. And I always want to say the best op you're ever going to find is other people's people, right? That's an op, other people's people, right? And so really, and they're just out there. You don't even have to look all that hard, really, right? You probably know enough people already that would get you to where you wanted to go if you just connected to them.
And
right?
Ask.
And ask, right? And ask.
Yeah, and ask. It's still hard for me to ask. It's still one of those things I struggle with. So, but I know what my strengths are, and I play to my strengths, and I know the opportunities for growth are those ops and other people. And so reaching out and asking is huge.
And you know what I think too is that there have been a couple times that I've asked somebody to support me in something. And I will never forget that one person said to me, they said, Patty, thank you so much for asking. You know, you do so much. I love the opportunity of being able to do something for you. And I think it's really true. I mean, it doesn't matter whether we're going to church, where we serve, from a stage. The bottom line is people want, that's reciprocity, right? They want to do something for you too. So sometimes really when you don't ask, you're really doing people a disservice. They want to help you.
Right? And I think it creates a disconnect from people. Like if you're not asking for support, they see you as you've got, you know, you're not vulnerable, you got your armor up, or everything's going really well. So they're surprised when they find out maybe things aren't going well. But I also, you know, I always talk about we grow faster when we grow together. It's been the biggest lesson I've had to learn in my business. And it was, I wouldn't have had my publishing company in Dallas if I didn't have such a huge community of support. And I haven't recreated that in the same way here in Santa Barbara. And I miss that community. Like there was so much business support in that community. It was so powerful. And I'm forever grateful, especially with the Plano Chamber of Commerce, for the amount of support that I got to help me get my business off the ground and grow and flourish for 11 years.
I love that. Thank you so much for being here and taking time out. I just really love it. I know our paths are going to cross again and stuff. I really absolutely love it. So thank you so much for being here today. And for those of you out there, if you enjoyed today's episode, and I'm sure you did, please like, subscribe, review the podcast on your favorite listening platform, and join us on Facebook in the Marketing Media Money Magazine podcast and live event Facebook group and get up close and personal with our guests. Until then, make it a phenomenal day. And if it's not phenomenal, change it.
Thank you for joining us today on the Marketing, Media, and Money podcast. To shorten your learning curve even more, make sure to grab your free copy of the Marketing, Media, and Money magazine at www.marketingmediamoney.com. I promise your business will thank you.